Eli would return to Myanmar with the other cadets. And with a story he'd be able to tell people for the rest of his life. And really, what could go wrong?
You seem amused, Cadet Banto said.
He leans back in his seat. Amused?
Fraun asked.
Entertained, with a feeling of humor, Banto said.
He switches back to Sibisti for the explanation.
Was there anything in particular about this story that you found humorous?
I found the story quite interesting.
Some of my stories you find interesting, Banto said.
Wrinkles form across his forehead.
Others you seem to find unbelievable. A few of them you find amusing. This was one of those.
I do not mean to offend, Thrawn said. But I myself am Chiss, and never have I heard of any of my people wielding such a power.
I'll concede that one, Banto said.
The wrinkles partially smooth out.
I told you right from the beginning that these stories are barely above the level of myths, but you asked to hear them.
I appreciate your willingness to share, Thrawn said. One may learn a great deal about a people by the stories they tell of others.
And? Banto asked.
The wrinkles return. His head turns slightly to his right. I do not understand.
I ask what you've learned about humans, Banto said.
His eyes narrow slightly.
I misspoke. Apologies. I meant to say I could learn about one person, you, from the stories you choose to tell. And what have you learned about me? Banto asked.
His eyes return to normal size. His vocal tone lowers in pitch.
That you do not wish to be here, Thrawn said. You do not wish to act as translator and assistant. You certainly do not wish to act as interrogator. Who said I was an interrogator? Banto asked.
His tone rises slightly in pitch and volume. The musculature beneath his sleeves tightens. You wish to return to your numbers and inventory lists, Thrawn said.
That is where your talents lie, and where you desire your path to lead.
Fascinating, Banto said.
His tone takes on a new rumbling texture. The corners of his lips tighten briefly.
I suppose that as a big, important military commander, you find logistics and supply beneath your dignity?
Do you?
Of course not, Banto said.
His torso stretches slightly upward in his chair. His voice takes on a fuller tone.
Because I know better. My family has done that kind of work for 3 generations. I'm just doing it for the Imperial Navy now, instead of for my own family, that's all.
I presume you are good at it.
I'm very good at it, Banto said. Lieutenant Osterigi told me I'm one of the best cadets he's ever had aboard. As soon as I finish my last term at the academy, I'll be guaranteed an assignment aboard a ship of the line.
Is what you wish?
Thrawn asked.
Absolutely, Banto said.
The fuller tone partially fades from his voice.
What I don't know is why you care.
Why I care about what?
Why you care about me? Banto said.
His eyes narrow again. His tone returns to the lower pitch.
You've been studying me. Don't think I haven't noticed. You asked me to tell you one of the legends I learned as a child. Then you ask about my home or background or childhood. Always small questions. Always delivered very casually. What I want to know is why.
He folds his arms in a crisscross pattern across his chest.
I am sorry, Thrawn said.
I meant no harm. I was merely interested in you, as I am interested in everything about your empire.
But why me? Banto asked. You never asked about Captain Park or Major Barriss, or any of the other senior officers, or even about Emperor Palpatine or the Imperial Senate.
They are not connected to my immediate survival, Thrawn said. You are.
With all due respect, he couldn't be more wrong, Vento said.
He shakes his head back and forth, sideways.
Captain Park could order you shoved out an airlock at any time. Major Barriss could trump up charges or implicate you in something and have you shot.
As for the Emperor...
The musculature of his throat tightens briefly. There is an enhanced infrared glow from his face.
He has absolute power over everyone and everything in the Empire. If he isn't amused or pleased with you, you'll end up dead.
Captain Park seeks honor and promotion, Thrawn said. He believes me to be the path to that end. Major Barriss dislikes me, but will not risk angering his captain. As for the Emperor, we shall see.
Fine, Vento said.
The musculature of his throat relaxes partially, but not fully.
Personally, I'd be a lot more concerned about him, but that's up to you. But I'm still the bottom man on the roster. Why do you even care about me?
You are my translator. You hold my words in your hand, and their meanings. A misjudged translation will confuse or anger. A deliberate error could lead to death.
Great spit, Vento said.
He makes a snorting sound through his nose. Forgive me?
I call crate spit, Vento said. You've picked up a lot of basic in the past couple of days. You speak it as well as I do. Probably better. You don't have a wild space accent people can make fun of. The last thing you need is a translator.
You make my case for me, Thrawn said. What is meant by crate spit?
It's a slang term for nonsense, Vento said.
The left corner of his lip twists upward.
Especially nonsense that the speaker knows is nonsense.
I see. Crate spit. I will remember that.
Don't, Vento said.
His tone is deep. The word sharply clipped.
It's not polite. It also reeks of backwater places like Lysatra. Backwater means any planet that's not part of the core worlds and the elite and powerful people who live there.
I presume there exists a hierarchy of worlds and people who inhabit them.
Finally, a question about the actual Empire, Vento said. Yes, absolutely there's a hierarchy. A big, impressive, mostly unwritten, but absolutely rigid hierarchy. If you were counting on me to introduce you to the high and mighty, you're going to be seriously disappointed.
You give yourself too little credit, Cadet Vanto, Thrawn said. Or perhaps you give the social hierarchy too much. I'm content to have you as my translator.
I'm glad you're pleased, Vanto said.
His tone rises slightly in pitch. His throat musculature still shows tightness.
Not that you had any choice in the matter.
Perhaps, Thrawn said. Tell me, when do we arrive at your capital world?
My orders are to have you in the forward hangar bay. That's the one you tried to escape from. At 0700 tomorrow morning, Vanto said.
And I will meet with the Emperor soon after that.
I have no idea what happens after that, Vanto said.
The muscles under his tunic stiffen slightly, and wrinkles return to his forehead.
But odds are it won't be anyone even close to the Emperor. Probably some senior administrator. Maybe even a junior one.
Will you come with me?
That's up to the captain, Vanto said. I do still have other duties aboard the Strikefast. I also need to prepare for my return to the Myomar Academy.
Your duties and studies are, of course, important, Thrawn said. We shall see what decision Captain Park comes to. Until morning, Cadet, I bid you farewell, and good evening.
Yes, Banto said.
The tension in his musculature decreases, but it is not entirely gone.
Until morning.
Captain Park's personal Lambda shuttle left the hangar at precisely 07:05 the next morning. Apart from Park, Thrawn, and Eli, the passenger list included Major Barriss, three of the Navy troopers who'd been on the planet when Thrawn was running everyone in circles, and two stormtroopers, presumably also part of the group who'd seen the alien in action. There were also 10 heavily armed Navy troopers. If Park was worried about hard-eyed, high-command administrators, he also wasn't taking any chances on his prisoner making a break for it once they reached the planet. Like everyone else in the Empire, Eli had seen hundreds of hollows of Coruscant. He'd also spent a couple of hours studying planetary maps the day after Park announced they were heading there. None of it prepared him for the breathtaking grandeur of the real thing. He gazed at the passenger cabin's repeater display, watching in utter fascination. The entire planet was surrounded by half a dozen rings of orbiting transports, passenger ships, and military vessels, each awaiting its turn to head to the surface. Elsewhere, steady streams of outgoing ships created subtle fountains of light as they joined the various exit corridors for passage through the atmosphere, then scattered in all directions once they reached space. As the Lambda continued inward, Eli watched the array of glittering star-like points that covered the planet slowly resolve into buildings and towers. Still closer, and the grid lines of repulsor lift vehicles wove their packed way between the towering buildings, doing their intricate dance as they headed for 1,000 destinations. A sobering thought occurred to him. Right now, he could probably see more vehicles than were on his entire home planet. The pilot eased them into one of the higher lanes, one that seemed reserved for military vehicles. They were close enough now that Eli could pick out specific landmarks. There was the Royal Imperial Academy, where the Empire's elite trained for the Army and Navy. Beyond it, and to the east, was one of the industrial areas, with tall towers spewing superheated wastewater vapor high into the atmosphere. In the distance beyond that, he could see an open area that was far below the tops of the surrounding towers, yet still many levels above the actual planetary surface. A landing area, most likely, probably for elite politicians or larger military vessels. He spotted the top of the Imperial Senate building in the other direction. He caught his breath. If the Senate was there, and the Royal Academy back there, they weren't heading to either the Admiralty or the Imperial Security Bureau headquarters, which he'd concluded were the two most likely destinations. They were heading straight for the Imperial Palace. The Imperial Palace? No, that couldn't be. Not for a single random blue-skinned near-human captured on an unnamed world out in wild space. There was no possible way the Emperor would even notice such an event, let alone take a personal interest in it. And yet, that seemed to be exactly what had happened. Surreptitiously, Eli looked across the aisle where Thrawn and Park sat together surrounded by guards. The captain looked unnaturally stiff, as if he couldn't believe their destination any more than Eli could. The guards looked the same way, except that some of them looked quietly but genuinely terrified. As well they should be. These were the men and women whose mistakes had allowed Thrawn to get aboard the Strikefast in the first place. There were dark stories about what the Emperor did with people who'd failed him. But Thrawn himself didn't look frightened, or even concerned. All Eli could see in his face was that maddening confidence of his. Maybe Park hadn't told him where they were going. Maybe he hadn't told him about the Emperor's history or his reputation. Or maybe he'd told Thrawn everything, and the Chiss simply assumed that whatever their destination, he would have things under control. Eli turned back to the display, the old stories of Chiss military power echoing through his mind. As far as he had been able to ascertain, that whole culture and society had been lost from Republic knowledge for centuries, maybe even millennia. Now, suddenly, they'd re-entered history. Was Thrawn's level of confidence unique to him? Or were all the Chiss like this? As someone who might someday be called upon to fight them, he hoped fervently it wasn't the latter. Eli had almost managed to convince himself that the group would merely be meeting with some palace official when they were ushered past a pair of red-robed and red-helmeted Imperial guards into the Emperor's throne room. Even more than Coruscant itself, the hollows and vids Eli had seen of Emperor Palpatine paled in comparison with the real thing. At first glance, the Emperor didn't seem like much. He was dressed in a plain brown hooded robe, with no ornamentation or glitz of any sort. His throne, while massive, was solid black and very simple, again with no ostentation about it, raised a mere 4 steps above the floor. In fact, the darkness of his robe made him almost disappear from sight into the black of the throne. It was as the group drew closer that the eeriness began. First was the Emperor's face. The hollows and vids always showed him as a dignified older man, aged somewhat with the experience of life and the cares of leadership. But the hollows were wrong. The face beneath the hood was old. Old and creased with 100 deep wrinkles. Not ordinary wrinkles either. The kind Eli's grandparents had earned from years under the open sky. These creases were less like age and more like scars or burn tissue. The history stated that the Jedi traitor's last attempt to seize power had been an attack on then-Chancellor Palpatine. The histories hadn't mentioned that his victory over the assassins had come at such a terrible cost. Perhaps that was also what had happened to his eyes. A shiver ran up Eli's back. The eyes were bright and intelligent, all-knowing and utterly powerful. But they were strange, unique, disturbing, damaged perhaps by the same treachery that had ravaged his face. Intelligence, knowledge, power. And even more than with Thrawn, a sense of complete mastery over everything around him. The Emperor watched in silence as the party walked toward him. Park led the way, Barriss and Eli behind him, followed by Thrawn and the Navy Trooper and Stormtrooper witnesses. The guard contingent Park had brought remained outside the door, 6 of the Imperial Guards having taken over their escort duty. It seemed to take forever to reach the throne. Eli wondered how close they would be permitted to approach, and how Captain Park would know when he had reached that point. The question was answered as Park came to within 5 meters, and the 2 Imperial Guards at the foot of the steps glided to positions directly in front of him. Park stopped, the rest of them following suit, and waited. And waited. It was probably only 5 seconds, but to Eli, it felt like a medium-sized eternity. The entire throne room was utterly still, utterly silent. The only sound was the thudding of his pulse in his ears. The only movement, the shaking of his arms in his sleeves.
"Captain Park,"
the Emperor said at last, his gravelly voice neutral.
I'm told you bring me a gift.
Eli winced. A gift? For the Chiss of the stories, that would have been a deadly insult.
Thrawn was behind him, and Eli didn't dare turn around, but he could imagine the expression on that proud face.
I do, Your Majesty,
Park said, bowing low.
A warrior reportedly of a species known as the Chiss.
Indeed,
the Emperor said, his voice growing even drier.
And what, pray tell, would you have me do with him?
If I may, Your Majesty,
Thrawn put in before Park could answer.
I am not merely a gift. I am also a resource. One you have never seen the like of before, and may never see again. You would do well to utilize me.
Would I?
The Emperor said, sounding amused.
Certainly you're a resource of unlimited confidence. What exactly do you offer, Chiss?
As a start, I offer information,
Thrawn said. If he was offended, Eli couldn't hear it in his voice.
There are threats lurking in the unknown regions. Threats that will someday find your empire. I am familiar with many of them.
I will learn of them soon enough on my own,
the Emperor countered placidly.
Can you offer anything more?
Perhaps you will learn of them in time to defeat them,
Thrawn said.
Perhaps you will not. What more do I offer? I offer my military skill. You could utilize that skill in making plans to seek out and eliminate these dangers.
These threats you speak of,
the Emperor said.
I presume they're not simply threats to my empire.
No, Your Majesty,
Thrawn said.
They are also threats to my people.
And you seek to eliminate all such threats to your people.
I do.
The Emperor's yellowish eyes seemed to glitter.
And you wish the help of my empire?
Your assistance would be welcome.
You wish me to assist the people who exiled you?
The Emperor said.
Or was Captain Park incorrect?
He spoke correctly, Thrawn said. I was indeed exiled.
Yet you still seek to protect them. Why?
Because they are my people.
And if they withhold their gratitude and refuse to accept you back, what then?
There was a slight pause, and Eli had the eerie sense that Thrawn was giving the Emperor one of those small smiles he was so good at.
I do not need their permission to protect them, Your Majesty. Nor do I expect their thanks.
I've seen others with your sense of nobility,
the Emperor said.
Most fell by the wayside when their naive selflessness collided with the real world.
I have faced the real world, as you call it.
You have indeed,
the Emperor said.
What exactly do you wish from my empire?
A state of mutual gain,
Thrawn said.
I offer my knowledge and skill to you now, in exchange for your consideration to my people in the future.
And when that future comes, what if I refuse to grant that consideration?
Then I will have gambled and lost,
Thrawn said calmly.
But I have until that time to convince you that my goals and yours do indeed coincide.
Interesting,
the Emperor murmured.
Tell me, if you served the Empire, yet a threat arose against your people, where would your loyalties lie? Which of us would command your allegiance?
I see no conflict in the sharing of information.
I'm not speaking of information,
the Emperor said.
I'm speaking of service.
There was a short pause.
If I were to serve the Empire, you would command my allegiance.
What guarantee do you offer?
My word is my guarantee, Thrawn said. Perhaps your servant can speak to the strength of that vow.
My servant?
The Emperor asked, his eyes flicking to Park.
I do not refer to Captain Park, Thrawn said. I speak of another. Perhaps I assumed incorrectly that he was your servant. Yet he always spoke highly of Chancellor Palpatine.
The Emperor leaned forward a little, his yellowish eyes glittering.
And his name?
Skywalker, Thrawn said. Anakin Skywalker.
Chapter 3. War is primarily a game of skill. It is a contest of mind matched against mind, tactics matched against tactics. But there is also an element of chance that is more suited to games of cards or dice. A wise tactician studies those games as well and learns from them. The first lesson of card games is that the cards cannot be played in random order. Only when laid down properly can victory be achieved. In this case, there were but three cards. The first was played at the encampment. The result was entrance to the Strikefast. The second was played aboard ship. The result was the promise of passage to Coruscant, and the assignment of Cadet Vanto as my translator. The third was a name. Anakin Skywalker.
Interesting,
the Emperor said.
His eyes are steady and do not blink. The skin of his face is unmoving.
And your name?
You already know it.
I wish you to speak it.
Mithron Yuruodo.
So it was you,
the Emperor said.
He leans back in his throne. The corners of his lips curve upward. His eyes remain unchanged in size.
When Captain Park's message arrived, I'd hoped it was.
Jedi Skywalker survived the war, then?
Sadly, he did not,
the Emperor said.
I mourn his passing,
Thrawn said.
He was a most cunning and... May I consult my translator?
You may, the Emperor said.
His eyes narrow slightly. The yellow tinge now appears stronger. Ikua?
Courageous,
Vanto translated.
His face radiates extra heat. The muscles beneath his tunic show stiffness. His lips compress tightly before and after he speaks the word.
He was a most cunning and courageous warrior,
Thrawn continued.
I had hoped to meet him again.
Most courageous indeed,
the Emperor said.
His head turns slightly to his neck. His eyes rest briefly on Vanto, then return. His fingers press gently against the arms of his throne.
But before his end, he detailed for me the circumstances of your meeting, and spoke highly of your abilities. So you wish to become my advisor on matters of the unknown regions?
I have said that already.
And if I offered more?
The Emperor asked.
What larger offer would you make?
You can see the power that I have created,
the Emperor said.
His eyes are strongly focused, his lips showing a small curve.
Or you can be part of it.
My home is lost to me,
Thrawn said. Jedi Skywalker's services are lost to you.
If you wish my direct service as a replacement to his, I am honored to offer it.
Interesting,
the Emperor said.
His eyes linger a moment, then shift their direction and focus on Captain Park.
You were correct to bring your prisoner to me, Captain. You and your men will return to your ship and your duties. The High Command will provide a suitable reward for your service and initiative.
Yes, Your Majesty,
Park said, bowing again.
Thank you.
A favor, Your Majesty,
Thrawn said.
Speak, Mithron Uruodo,
the Emperor said.
His eyes narrow.
I am still inexpert at your language. I would request that my translator be transferred to duty at my side.
The Emperor sits motionlessly, without speaking. He then presses his hands onto the throne's armrests and rises to his feet.
Walk with me, Mithron Uruodo.
The two guards at the foot of the throne stepped a meter to either side. The Emperor descended to the floor and turned to his left, toward a garden area at the side of the chamber.
The garden is small, but contains a variety of plants. Most are set in large pots or in long floor trenches, lining the curved flagstone walkways. A few brightly colored flowers grow directly from the decorative stone. Small trees with shimmering bark stand at the periphery like sentinels of privacy. The distance from garden to throne ensures privacy from those still waiting there. There is an artistic foundation to the garden's arrangement. There is a pattern in the interaction of curve and line, in the melding and contrast of shape and color, in the subtle play of light and shadow. It bespeaks power and subtlety and great depth of thought.
An interesting space, Thrawn said. Did you create it?
I designed it,
the Emperor said. He stopped within the first curve of bushes.
Tell me, what do you think?
Subtlety and depth of thought.
You did not bring me here to speak of translators, Thrawn told him. But you wished Captain Park and the others to so believe.
Good,
the Emperor said.
His tone is deeper. The corners of his lips lift. His mouth opens slightly, revealing his teeth.
Good. Anakin spoke of your insight. I'm pleased to learn he was correct. The unknown regions intrigue me, Mithron Uruodo. There is great potential there.
There is also great danger.
There is great danger here as well, the Emperor countered.
The corners of his lips turn downward, and his eyes narrow.
Certainly there is power here, Thrawn said. But there is only danger to your enemies.
You do not consider your people to be among those enemies.
You spoke of an interest in the unknown regions. How may I assist in satisfying your curiosity?
You seek to avoid my question, the Emperor said.
His lips compressed together.
Tell me, do your people regard the Empire as their enemy?
I am not accountable for the future actions or goals of my people, Thrawn said. I can speak only for myself. And I have said already, I will serve you.
Until you find it convenient to escape from my reach?
I am a warrior, Your Majesty, Thrawn said. A warrior may retreat. He does not flee. He may lie in ambush. He does not hide. He may experience victory or defeat. He does not
cease to serve.
I will hold you to that,
the Emperor said.
Why do you wish to have your translator?
He knows something of my people,
Thrawn said.
I wish to explore the depth of that knowledge.
If he has knowledge of the unknown regions, then perhaps I should instead keep him here with me.
His knowledge is little more than stories and tales,
Thrawn said. He will not know worlds or peoples, nor will he know hyperspace lanes and potential safe havens.
That knowledge lies solely with you?
The Emperor asked.
His tone lowers in pitch.
For the moment, Thrawn said. Later, it will lie also with you.
Once again, your eloquence belies your need for a translator,
the Emperor said.
His lips again turn upward.
But I will give him to you. Come, let us rejoin the others.
The group was still waiting between the lines of guards.
This is he?
The Emperor asked, pointing at Vanto.
It is, Your Majesty, Thrawn said. Cadet Eli Vanto.
Captain Park, how much longer does Cadet Vanto have before graduation?
3 standard months, Your Majesty,
Park said.
We were scheduled to return him and his fellow cadets to Myanmar when we were sidetracked by the smuggler pursuit that ultimately brought us to Thrawn's place of exile.
You will return the other cadets as planned, the Emperor said. Cadet Vanto will remain on Coruscant and finish his training at the Royal Imperial Academy.
Yes, Your Majesty,
Park said, looking briefly at Vanto, then at Thrawn.
I'll inform Admiral Foss of this change.
Vanto's face radiates more strongly than before, and the muscles in his throat have stiffened. He begins to open his mouth, as if to speak, but closes it with no word spoken. He does not understand, nor will he, not for a long while.
The Myanmar Academy, situated in the expansion region, was staffed and attended mostly by residents of backwater worlds. There, Eli had been among his own kind, about as relaxed and comfortable as it was possible to be, given the excruciating pressure of the Empire's most intense training regimen. The Royal Imperial Academy, in contrast, was staffed exclusively by the elite of the Empire, with a student body to match. From the moment Eli and Thrawn set foot off the shuttle from the palace, he could feel everyone's eyes fixed firmly on the newcomers. And he had no doubt that most of those eyes were hostile. The alien and the backwater yokel. This, Eli thought glumly, was a classic joke in the making. Commandant Dienlar clearly thought likewise.
So,
he ground out, his eyes flicking back and forth between the two of them as they stood at attention in front of his desk.
Is this Admiral Foss's idea of a joke?
Thrawn didn't answer, apparently leaving this one to Eli. Great.
The Emperor himself sent us here, sir,
Eli said, not knowing what else to say.
That was a rhetorical question, cadet,
Dienlar growled, glaring at him from under bushy eyebrows.
You do have complicated words like rhetorical and wild space, don't you?
Eli clenched his teeth.
Yes, sir.
Good,
Dienlark said.
Because we use a lot of big words here. We wouldn't want you to get lost.
He shifted his glare to Thrawn.
What's your excuse, alien?
My excuse for what, sir?
Thrawn asked calmly.
Your excuse for living,
Dienlark bit out.
Well?
Thrawn remained silent. And for a few seconds, the two of them locked gazes. Then Dean Lark's lip twitched.
Yeah, like I thought,
the Commandant said sourly.
You're damn lucky the Emperor's taken a fancy to you. Though why, I can't guess.
He paused, as if expecting Thrawn to explain it to him. Again, the Chiss didn't respond.
Fine,
Dean Lark said at last.
Forth's message said you were some kind of fancy-faced soldier already. That all you needed was a little orientation in Imperial procedure, equipment, and terminology. That scans out to a 6-month course for the typical raw recruit. Probably 2 years for cadets from the back end of nowhere,
he added, looking at Eli. There were times, Eli had learned, when it didn't pay to say anything. This was one of them. He kept his head up, his eyes focused straight ahead, and his mouth closed.
So here's the deal,
Dean Lark said, turning back to Thrawn.
Cadet Vanto has 3 months left before commissioning. That's how long you have to come up to speed. You fail, and you're out.
The Emperor might disagree,
Thrawn said mildly. Dean Lark's lip twitched.
The Emperor would understand,
he said. But some of the air had gone out of his bluster.
His own mandate to the academies is to turn out officers worthy of Imperial service. Anything less, and the whole Navy suffers, officers and enlisted alike. Of course, if the Emperor wants to put you in by fiat, he can do that.
He raised his eyebrows.
I hope you'll prove good enough that he won't have to do that.
We shall see,
Thrawn said.
I guess we shall.
Dean Lark pursed his lips.
One other thing. Foss said you were to leave here as a lieutenant instead of the standard rank of ensign. Something about getting you into command position as quickly as possible. I figure why waste time?
Pulling open a drawer, he extracted a lieutenant's rank insignia plaque and gave it a spinning flip that landed it on the edge of the desk in front of Thrawn.
There you go. Congratulations, Lieutenant. Cadet Vanto can show you which way is up.
Thank you, sir,
Thrawn said politely, picking up the plaque.
I assume the proper uniforms will be delivered to our quarters.
Yes,
Dean Lark said, frowning.
You sure you even need a translator? Your basic seems pretty good.
Eli felt a flicker of hope. Dean Lark had already made it clear that he wasn't happy with this arrangement. He couldn't touch Thrawn directly, but maybe he could express some of his displeasure by refusing to accept Eli as Thrawn's translator. If he did, maybe there was still time for Eli to get back to Myanmar and finish his schooling in more comfortable surroundings.
There are yet many idioms and technical terms I'm unfamiliar with,
Thrawn said.
His service will be most valuable.
I'm sure it will,
Dean Lark conceded reluctantly.
Fine. Now get the hell out of here! I mean, dismissed cadets. You've been assigned a split double. Your men outside will have a mouse droid take you there. Schedules and directions are on your computer. Assuming you've figured out how to turn it on.
I'm familiar with your computer systems, Thrawn said.
I was talking to Vanto,
Dean Lark said sarcastically.
Dismissed!
The yeoman was as stiff as the Commandant, but he was efficient enough. 2 minutes later, Eli and Thrawn were following a mouse droid as it skittered its way along the walkway leading to Barracks 2. And just like that, Eli's life had been completely upended. His career trajectory with the Navy, so carefully calculated and implemented, was gone. Worse, just because he'd been solidly on track to graduate from Myanmar didn't mean he would make it in the much tougher environment of Royal Imperial. Even with only 3 months to go, he could still wash out. Especially since his time would now be split between his studies and playing word games with Thrawn. an alien who was even more of a fish ashore than Eli himself. An alien who could not possibly succeed. Eli knew what Imperial Academies were like. He'd heard all the running jokes about Faline, Umbarans, Nymoidians, and other aliens. And Royal Imperial, smack at the center of the Empire, would almost certainly be the worst of the lot. Thrawn had as much chance of surviving here as a wounded bird in a nest of blood spites. When he went down, would Eli go down with him? He had no idea. But he guessed he probably would.
"You seem thoughtful," Thrawn said.
Eli made a face. The Chiss had no idea what he'd let himself in for. "Just wondering how we're gonna do here."
"Yes." Thrawn was silent a moment. "You spoke once of a planetary and social hierarchy. Tell me how that hierarchy..."
He paused.
"Binisu."
Eli sighed.
"Manifests." "Thank you. How that hierarchy manifests here?"
"Probably the same as in any military academy," Eli said. "The commandant is on top, the instructors are below him, and the cadets are below them. Pretty simple, really."
"Are there good relations between each level of authority?"
"I don't know," Eli said. "They all have to work together, so I suppose they all get along."
"But there is rivalry between cadets."
"Of course."
"And the cadets have no official military rank or hierarchy until graduation?"
"There's an unspoken social order," Eli said, frowning. "Nothing official."
"Why all the questions?"
"This..."
Thrawn opened his hand and gazed down at the lieutenant's rank plaque lying across his palm.
"I wish to understand why he gave it to me."
"Well, it wasn't from the goodness of his heart," Eli growled. "It wasn't to save time, either."
"Explain."
Eli huffed out a breath.
"Look, there are three reactions you're going to get as soon as you start flashing that plaque around. One, some students and instructors will see you as Dean Lark's pet and resent you for it."
"What is a pet?"
"In this case, slang for a favored student," Eli told him. "That group will resent you for all the privileges you're supposedly getting."
"I do not expect to get privileges."
"Doesn't matter. They'll still figure you're getting some. Reaction number two, some will see you as a failed officer who's been sent back for a refresher. That group will treat you with complete contempt."
"So this is not so much a gift as a weapon."
"A weapon against you, yeah," Eli said. "And then there's group three. They'll think you're a joke. No, on second thought, they'll probably think you're a test."
"What sort of test?"
"The really hard kind," Eli said.
Yes, this had to be what Dean Lark was going for.
"Okay, here. You're not supposed to show disrespect to superior officers. I assume it's also like that in the Chiss military, right?"
"Normally,"
Thrawn said, his voice going a little dry.
Eli winced.
For a moment, he'd forgotten how Thrawn had arrived in the Empire in the first place.
"Well, officially, we're not allowed to disrespect aliens either,"
he went on hurriedly.
"I say officially because that's what the general orders say we're supposed to do. But that's not always what we really do."
"You dislike non-humans?"
Eli hesitated. How was he supposed to answer that?
"There were a lot of different non-human groups in the Separatist movement," he said,
choosing his words carefully.
"The Clone Wars killed a lot of people and devastated whole worlds. There's still a lot of resentment about that, especially among humans."
"But were not other non-human groups allied with the Republic?"
"Sure," Eli said. "And most of them did all right. But humans still carried most of the weight,"
he considered.
"Well, that's the perception anyway. I don't know if it's actually true."
Thrawn nodded. Either agreement or simple acknowledgement.
"Either way,
Would it not be more reasonable to resent only those non-human groups that opposed you?
Probably, Eli said. Well, okay, definitely. And it probably started that way. But sometimes that sort of thing seeps down to other groups.
He hesitated.
On top of that, there's a lot of contempt in the core worlds toward the people anywhere past the mid-rim, humans and non-humans alike. And with me from Wild Space, and you from the unknown regions, we're about as far into the sneer zone as you can get.
I see, Thrawn said.
If I understand, I am untouchable for three reasons. I am an officer. I am not human. And I am from the disrespected edge of the Empire. So the test for the cadets would be to see how creative they can be in their disrespect toward me?
Basically, Eli said. And how close to the line they can get without stepping over it.
Which line? The line where they've done something that can't be ignored, Eli said, trying to think.
Okay, try this. Someone could shove you off a walkway and claim you were the one who bumped into him. But he couldn't break into your quarters and wreck your computer. See the difference? In the second case, there's no way he could claim you were the one at fault.
Unless he claimed I had stored stolen data on the computer, and he was attempting to retrieve it.
Eli winced.
I hadn't thought of that, he said. But yeah, that's exactly how it would work. Though in that case, he'd have to prove you had stolen data in order to get away with it.
It could be planted after my quarters were entered.
I suppose,
Eli said. This just got better and better.
Looks like we're going to be walking on eggshells for the next 3 months.
Thrawn was silent another few steps.
I assume that is another idiom, he said. Perhaps it would be better if you did not walk on these eggshells alongside me.
Yeah. Well, you should have thought about that before you asked the Emperor to stick me as your translator,
Eli said sourly.
You want to call the palace and tell him you've changed your mind?
I still require your services, Thrawn said. But you could join the others in expressing your contempt for me.
Eli frowned.
Come again?
Excuse me.
Eli rolled his eyes. Sometimes Thrawn caught these idioms right away. Other times he didn't have a clue.
That means I want you to repeat that, or otherwise explain what you mean.
Were the words not clear?
Very well. You may make it clear to the others that I am no more than an assignment. One, moreover, that you resisted and thoroughly dislike.
I don't dislike my assignment,
Eli protested, the polite lie automatically coming to his lips.
And I don't dislike you.
Do you not?
Thrawn countered.
Because of me, you were taken from your ship and brought to this academy, which you fear.
Eli felt something stir inside him.
Who said I was afraid? He demanded. I'm not afraid. I'm just not looking forward to spending my last term with a bunch of core world snobs, that's all.
I am glad to hear that,
Thrawn said gravely.
We shall endure it together.
Yeah,
Eli said, frowning hard at him. Had he just been maneuvered into supporting the Chiss against whatever the Royal Imperial could throw at them?
Apparently he had.
Which didn't mean he couldn't backpedal on that any time he wanted to. And that time might very well come.
I can hardly wait, he said.
Change of subject. Did you really meet General Skywalker?
I did,
Thrawn said, his voice going distant.
It was an interesting time.
That's it? That's all you're going to tell me? That it was interesting?
For now, Thrawn said. Perhaps we will speak more of it later.
He opened his hand and looked at his new rank plaque.
I cannot help being non-human or coming from a region of low respect, he said. But perhaps it would be best if we kept this a secret between us.
He slipped the plaque out of sight into his tunic. Eli nodded.
Works for me.
Ahead, the mouse droid rolled to the front of a three-story building and stopped, waiting for someone to open the door for it.
I guess we're here,
Eli added.
Let's see what the Admiralty has sent ahead for us.
And then we will learn our schedule and duties, Thrawn said, and prepare as best we can for the onslaught.
Eli sighed.
Yeah, and that.
Chapter 4.
To some extent, the direction of one's chosen path automatically selects for the paths that may cross it. A warrior's path will intersect the paths of other warriors, allies and enemies alike. A worker's path will intersect with the paths of other workers. But as with games of cards or dice, sometimes unexpected crossings occur. Some are driven by chance, others by design, others by a change in one's goals. Some are driven by malice. Such manipulations can prove effective in the short term, but the longer term consequences can be perilously difficult to predict. The path of Arinda Price is one such example. A deep and perceptive study of it can serve as a valuable lesson, and as an even more valuable warning.
Ms. Price!
Arinda Price paused and turned around. Hurrying toward her down the long corridor was Arik Uvis, a data pad in his hand, an intense expression on his face. Arinda glowered to herself. Uvis, with one of his rock-brained questions or comments, wasn't something she really wanted to deal with right now. But he wasn't going away, and the Price Mining's corporate building was far too small for her to successfully avoid him all day.
Might as well get it over with.
He caught up to her and stopped.
Miss Price!
He repeated, breathing a little heavily. The man was in his mid-30s, about Arinda's own age, but in far worse shape.
Glad I caught you.
What can I do for you, Mr. Uvis?
Arinda asked, keeping her face and voice neutral.
I heard a rumor that your father's just uncovered a heretofore unknown vein of Dunium,
Uvis said.
Is that true?
It is,
Arinda said, wondering darkly who had let the news slip. Dunium was one of the hardest metals known, making it a key component in the manufacture of warship hulls and under the Imperial Navy's recently accelerated shipbuilding program, the price of the metal had skyrocketed. Even a hint that a fresh line had been found would be enough to initiate a feeding frenzy among refiners and ore buyers alike.
May I ask how you heard of it?
That's not important,
Uvis said.
What's important is that we guard the find so that we can take full advantage of it.
I'm sure my mother's already on it,
Arinda assured him.
We have several contacts among brokers capable of handling something like this.
Uvis snorted.
I'm sure you do,
he said in a vaguely condescending tone.
Small local people, no doubt, who work on a promise and a handshake.
Not all of them are small,
Arinda said, trying hard not to let her irritation show. Uvis was an outsider from the Corps who'd been more or less forced on them by Governor Azadi's office 6 standard months ago. She could probably count his trips outside the capital city area during that time on one hand. Not only did he know virtually nothing about Lothal, but he clearly didn't care to learn.
But so what if they are? If any one of them can't handle the full contract, we'll just make deals with 2 or 3 or 4. Everything's interconnected here.
And I have no doubt that system works fine for the average backwoods outer rim world,
Uvis said with strained.